Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, America, and good morning, world. Good morning, America, and good morning, world. I hope everybody is well and blessed in their segment of the planet. Hold on, change is coming. Some good things are coming. They're coming. They're on their way. It's amazing and a beautiful thing. I'm telling you, I'm just telling you something else. You must know I got something good. And I do. Very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. Today is January the 24th of the year 2016. Let me start off by saying I thank my listeners for coming out and listening to the broadcast. Tell a friend. Tell a neighbor. Spread the message. Don't keep good information to yourself. This broadcast is growing every day in great and exponential numbers. And the reason it is because what I've been talking about for years is starting to resonate. What I've been talking about for years, and when I say years, I'm talking 30 years. Oops. Kind of giving my age away, but I've been talking about, you know, what's taking place right now for a really, really long time. It must have been about 30 years ago, I will safely say that, I had and owned a resource center, and I'm just going to say it was in Texas, in the state of Texas, and it grew, very greatly. My objective at that particular time, as it is today, is to bring churches and the communities together under one common objective, one common cause, one common plight, if you will, to survive and to thrive, you know, in their communities and to grow and flourish. In the community. Folks, and it's an amazing thing when you think about the concept of what economics is based on. And that's based on money, the dollar, okay, if you will. Now, the amazing thing about the dollar, I don't know if you've really ever thought about this or not, and you probably heard this saying many times before, but really never, caught hold about what it's really saying here. And it's that the dollar or money is not even worth the paper that it's printed on. Now, if we think about that in its reality, it's not, because it's a piece of paper with some ink on it, with some pictures of some dead presidents on it, which, you know, it is referred to as dead presidents, you know, in a lot of communities and things of that nature. It has, you know, numbers painted on it or affixed to it, and magically it has power. And when I say it has power, money can buy things, can buy people, can do a lot of, you know, can do a lot of things with money. A person can do a lot of things with money. And a lot of times it's not for the better, it's not for the good, but, you know, they create something out of nothing, just totally out of nothing, and give it authority over mankind, over the economy, and over, you know, over life, if you will. And the amazing thing about it is, and I'm jumping tracks just a little bit here, but the name of this broadcast is Global Transformation. I'm gonna tell you why, just the name of the broadcast, because there's a lot of things that are taking place. But you might want to, you know, when you get a moment, you know, check out this one piece called 10 Things Every American Should Know About the Federal Reserve. It's a heck of a writing. It really is. And how here in America, say for instance, the government needs a bazillion dollars, let's just say. Where are they going to get it from? Where are they going to get a bazillion dollars? Okay, so they call the Federal Reserve. Federal Reserve, print us up some money. How much you need, government? Well, we need a bazillion dollars. No problem. Hit the presses, Sam. They get to rolling. Bum, 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 bum. Printing money, printing money, printing money, printing money. Well, we got your $10 bazillion ready, or your bazillion dollars ready, American government. All right, we'll send it on over. So they send it over, via electronic, gadgetry. They don't actually bring them a $10 bazillion or $1 bazillion in hard currency. They transfer it over. Well, what are you going to give us? Let's say the Federal Reserve says, well, what are you going to give us for this, bazillion dollars, American government? We're going to give you an IOU. It's like, okay, we'll take it. Now, how can a government that don't have no money, as a matter of fact, a deficit of about a 12 a trillion or 20, I mean, excuse me, 20 a trillion dollars, support an IOU or even pass an IOU? That's acceptable by a Federal Reserve. But anyhow, they get the bazillion dollars. Now, I don't know how many of you realize, no one realizes the Federal Reserve is not a part of the federal government at all, in any way, form, or fashion. And it's one of the only entities that can use the word federal as a business and let it be acceptable and the laws that govern business here in America. The common person or the common company can't use that term or anything, like that. For simple fact, it would be confusing to a consumer and deceitful or deceptive to a consumer because it's not a part of the federal government or federal web or linkage, if you will. Has no federal, attachment to it, backing or otherwise. So, which makes this a very interesting. But anyhow, my point being is that, this money is created out of thin air, and it has no absolute value. It's not backed by anything, except for the IOU, that has no intentions on being repaid, and this is why we continue to fall further, into this debt spiral, because it has no intentions of being paid. Now, on the flip side of that, like I said before, there are people and families, in America. They can actually and literally write a check, and the deficit would be gone, would instantly disappear. There are individuals and there are families, powerful enough to and wealthy enough to do that. So, all of this is make-believe. All of this deficit and all this other kind of stuff. They can literally sense money. Or since a deficit is a numeric, what I want to say, a numeric value, a numeric thing, they can literally push Control Alt Delete and it'd be gone. Think about it for a moment. What would falter? What would fall down, or what would break apart? If the American government was to simply push Control Alt Delete on the debt, disappear, it'd be wiped away. Now, there are nations that have bought our debt and things of that nature in hopes of repayment. It would continue on, the relationships would continue on, the investment, the shared investment of one nation to another, like America and China and so forth and so on, would continue because without us, they wouldn't be, or they wouldn't have an economy. Without them, we wouldn't have an economy because we buy a whole lot of stuff. Majority of our things come, imported from China. So all of that business activity would continue, would carry on. Now, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of debts of nations that are waived, you know, through the Paris Club and things of that nature, where the debt just simply are forgiven. You know, we see this and have heard this, you know, many times in history, and it still occurs even today. So all of that in terms of the deficit and debt and all this other kind of stuff is a part of the grand illusion, you know, a part of, you know, it, like I say, it's make-believe, made up and make-believe, you know, and to keep us into this mental lock, if you will, of, oh, my gosh, the sky is falling, you know, things of that nature, you know. So all of that is, like I say, it's all man-created, all man-made, and it's a masterful work. And like I say, I've called it, you know, I used to play a little theme song, you know, starting song, and I call it the Masters of the Grand Illusion, because this is what this is, folks. I mean, it, when you think about the whole dynamic, the whole wide scope of picture of things, and how that, you know, think tanks of men have manipulated the minds of the common people and have led us down different paths, you know, of choice, of their choosing, and kept a lot of people in the dark, if you will, about the real activity that's going on behind the scenes, kind of like the Wizard of Oz, you know, where all of this stuff is taking place and all these lights and sounds are going off and stuff. And, you know, when Toto, the little dog, runs behind and pulls the curtain back, you know, it's just one guy standing in there making all this noise and pulling all these levers and different things like that. And, you know, none of it's real. You know, none of it's real. It's man-made. It's all him. And this is basically what has taken place, you know, over the thousands of years of our existence and evolution on this planet. And it's a masterful work. When you look at the whole dynamics of it, you cannot help but be, you almost kind of like applaud, you know, the way they have manipulated and done things, because it's such a, it's a mind manipulation. It's such a, well, they used to have, you know, they, you know, let's say a brain screw, you know, for so many people, that it's just mind-boggling and mind-blowing when you look at the whole dynamics of it. But global transformation, and this is a part of it. This is what's taking place right now, folks, you know, with all of these different, like I say, debt scenarios and different things like that. A lot of the wealth is leaving and vacating America. And the reason being is that, and I use this analogy many, many times in explaining this global transformation, a lot of people are just totally unaware of it. You know, it's just, it's amazing. A lot of my friends and colleagues had no earthly idea that this was taking place right before their eyes. They're so busy looking at the news and the media and the economy and different things like that, that they don't even understand what's going on behind the scenes, you know. And I just thank God that He has opened my eyes and my mind to what's going, what's happening, you know, behind the curtain, if you will. I have been able to look at the great eye. But in this transformation, and it has to take place. This is an inevitable thing when you're talking about globalization, global trade, global activity, global communities. You know. You know, just the word globalization, that simply means what it says. I can sit here, you know, in my office and literally conduct business simultaneously and instantaneously around the world through the means of technology and science and things of that nature. You know, so globalization is a real thing, and it's here. It's finally here. See, that's the issue. That's the whole thing. You know, up until this point right here and now, in pretty much, you know, close to these recent years, globalization has been a subject of conversation, and merely that. The framework and the concept, the framework and the development and all that kind of stuff was in a rollout mode. But now, folks, there's a different and a new dawn and a new day in the global transformation. They also call it the great leveling. The great leveling. And also they call it the greatest transformation of wealth in the history of the world. Now, if that phrase and that statement and that heading doesn't have impact, you know, to each and every one of us, we're not alive. Our heart stopped beating, we're flatlined out, you know. The greatest transformation of wealth in the history of the world is underway right now. And let me tell you how and why I say that. I was hanging out with my daughter just yesterday, and she's a college student. My daughter has just got a, she's been blessed with intelligence. You know, everybody has a gift and a forte and things of that nature. And she's just gifted with intelligence. Einstein is her model or her, you know, her guy, you know, if you will. That's, you know, she wears Einstein shirts and Einstein logos and different things like that. That's her thing. She was challenged. She skipped three grades coming up through school, and probably could have skipped more, but you know her age and all that kind of held that back. But she was challenged at one point in time back in high school with a professor came from Africa, and he was a mathematician. He's one of these super intelligent, you know, well-studied, you know, math guru type folks. And he presented her with a math challenge that was so challenging that he would tout the students that took the test, you know, took the challenge, that if they could pass this, you know, questionnaire and answer this equation, that they could skip out of, you know, test out of high school math, because it was just that complex, and rarely people, you know, get the answer to this equation. Now, he gave it to my daughter, and it took her 3 days and 9 pages of college rule paper, 9 pages, line by line. All of her little side, I've seen it, you know, all of her little side, calculation, different things like that, and you can't use a calculator. You have to do it, you know, all longhand, so that you know they can see, you know, the steps that you went through to obtain the answer, because that's what the challenge and the test is all about. You have to not miss one of those steps all the way through this challenge to arrive at the answer, and it was an amazing thing to see. You know, my child, you know, my daughter do it, because she didn't, I didn't teach her, you know, I couldn't, there's no way. She left me mathematically in like the third or fourth grade. You know, I couldn't, you know, the thing that she was asking, Daddy, you know, can you help me with this? And I'm like, darling, I said, what you doing right now? Dad can't even help you with, you know, and that was like back in the fourth grade. But that's the kind of math that she was doing, you know, at that particular point in time. You know, but anyhow, she answered the question 3 days later, 9 pages and 3 days later. The answer was zero, which was kind of mind-blowing to me, but it's all about the steps, how you got to that. And, of course, she got it right, and the professor was blown away. He was totally blown away. And anyhow, she was, you know, passed through her high school math, and that's what led her going on into college at such an early age, which she's in there now and doing extremely well. But anyhow, the class that she was in, it was an amazing thing, because they're starting to talk about the global transformation, globalization, and the fact of how that, you know, one powerful currency is going to have to come down or be devalued, you know, as the rest of the world currencies economically are coming up, or the emerging, what they call the emerging markets. You hear about it all the time. Cramer talks about it all the time. CNBC talks about it all the time. Folks, this is real. This is real as rain. What we're seeing in the stock market right now, these topsy turvy days and these roller coaster rides and all this. Just a couple of months ago, we had the greatest sell off in the history of the stock market. It lost like 1,000 points in a day, folks. This is a precursor for what's to come. This is all this is. When think tanks, you know, do dramatic things to the masses of people, they don't do it in such an abrupt way, so to speak. As in they pull a lever and, you know, put everything, you know, on tilt and just leave it like that, because it would create chaos. It would create just so much craziness and chaos in the American system, in the American country, that we could, you know, National Guard and all that kind of stuff would be, you know, hard pressed to deal with it. But if they do it gradually and they have a brain factor such as China or something going on in the world that helps, you know, offset and to disguise this transformation, then and do it incrementally, then it has less of an absolute impact on its objective, on what it's actually set out to do. But we can see it right before our eyes now. In this class that she's taking, you know, they're teaching the students of today about this globalization and what's required to make globalization possible. And, you know, how that, you know, we here in America are going to be adjusted in the negative to compensate for globalization. Because in order to trade effectively and instantaneously, simultaneously around the world, you have to have a common trade mechanism or a common trade, you know, value, you know, system in place. It's a lot more seamless, and it's a lot more, it works a lot better. And it's okay. I mean, we can do this because it's going to be done. You know, it wasn't ironic. It wasn't a crazy happenstance for Mr. Obama and Mr. Bush, George W. Bush, to meet over in the Congo of Africa, you know, several years back. They didn't do that by coincidence. Oh, hey, how you doing there, GW? Well, how you doing there, Barack? You know, fancy seeing you over here, you know, at the same time I'm over here. No. The presidents don't have coincidental meetings like that. This was well thought out. This was well planned. It happened to be televised. I happened to catch it. I was blown away when I heard it, you know, on TV and in the news. A lot of times this is something that is, you know, is kept, you know, under wraps, if you will, or, you know, behind the curtain, if you will. But they did let it out. And why were they there at the same time? Well, they were surveying their peace, their stake, you know, their claim, you know, in this transformation. And, I mean, this is how wealth works, folks. We just have to, face up to the facts. This is nothing but the facts. This is how wealth works. Wealth is powerful because they've created a powerful mechanism to control the lives of the masses. And this is just how it is. You know, I told you last broadcast, I believe, that I was talking to some really conservative friends of mine, ultra-conservative, right-winger type guys. They really absolutely hate the government and hate Mr. Obama, you know, just because of who he is and what he is, you know, and the government and this, that, and there, and the other, you know. But their complaint now has switched to the wealthy, you know, the wealth of the world. And how can 62 people, or 62 of the wealthiest people in the world, control, you know, more wealth than all the rest of the world? You know, and they have a complaint. They have an argument with this. They upset. They mad about it. You know, so you're going to start seeing, you know, some attacks and things going on, you know, on the wealthy. You hear a lot of people, you know, you hear Hillary or Bernie Sanders out there talking about, you know, the banks and the wealth and all this other kind of stuff. And, you know, you're going to hear that. You're going to hear that more and more. You're going to hear it resonating more and more now. Will that change, you know, the wealth structure? No. Because the wealthy will continue to be wealthy. But what they'll do is that they're moving their wealth to other parts of the world to set up for globalization. And it only makes sense. If I can get, say, for instance, a printer, I'll just say a printer. If I can get a printer made in America for, say, for, and the end cost of, say, for instance, $200, But I can go over to, you know, China or India or Brazil or, you know, or the Middle East or whatever, and get the and hire, put people to work that haven't worked before, you know, that will work hard and without complaint, as a lot of us do here in America, complain about this, that, and wages and all this other. We think we've complained in the past. Oh boy, get ready for some real belly aching coming along here real soon. But and this is why I, you know, beg and plead with, you know, the ears of influence, that they will start to educate. And this is what's happening. This is a great thing in terms of our kids and stuff being educated. We got to get to these old heads though and educate them on the reality of transformation, the reality of the greatest transformation of wealth, or the leveling, if you will, that's taking place right now. So I mean, this is a great thing to start, but we need to start, you know, filtering through the media and just kind of giving people, you know, more, you know, because it's all about conditioning of the mind. When we have change, when we go through change, especially as significant as this, you know, we have to condition our minds, you know, to withstand the change, that we will always continue to exist. America is a very resilient nation. We are the most resilient people on the planet. We find a way to make it work. We will watch football, you know, the NFL and American and baseball will be our American pastime, and apple pie will be made, and it will taste just as good in the future as it does today and in the past. This is a given. Because at the same time, you know, they need us as much as we need them. The wealth needs us, we need them. That's going to change for it's going to change for them as well. But you know, and in the global aspect of things, you know, they need us to develop nations, develop, you know, roads and infrastructure and all this other kind of good stuff, and we need them, you know, to be able to sell all of these products and different things that we have over here in America too. And it's a handshaking, if you will, global handshaking, as this thing, as this transformation takes place. But it's all about the education of how and what's going on, and you know, and how it really all works. But anyhow, my daughter comes home and she's telling me about, wow, Dad, you know, a lot of stuff that you've been talking about years ago is now we're starting to, you know, hear about it in school, and they're starting to teach us about it in school and everything. And it's just fascinating because, you know, it's like I already know a lot of this stuff. You know, all the stuff they're talking about, you've already prepared me on. You know, you've already talked about it, and you've, you know, shed a lot of light and shared a lot of things with me. So in the class, you know, when the professor is talking about all these different things, you know, I raise my hand as high as I possibly can, you know, and he won't call on me, you know. And I said, well, you know, there's got to be a reason for it. I said, have you ever talked to him? Like, you know, and she said, yeah, I talked to him in, you know, one-on-one scenarios and stuff like that. I said, do you share a lot of insight and different things that you know and stuff like, and she's like, yeah, I do. And I said, well, that's why he doesn't. That's why he doesn't call on you. Okay, it says I got 90 seconds. So love one another, take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. It's what God wants us to do. Why? Simply because God is love. But anyhow, and I said, well, that's why he doesn't call on you. And she says, well, why is that? He said, because you're gonna put some things in the class that he doesn't really want in the class at this particular juncture in time. You know, and he can tell that you're chomping at the bit, you know, to say a whole lot of things that's going to really, you know, kind of blow the minds of your classmates and stuff. She's like, well, yeah, I guess that's what it is. And so I said, because a lot of your class, the majority, probably all of your classmates, and this is a pretty good sized class, you know, they have no knowledge or no understanding about what's being said right now, and so they're bewildered. You know, and she said, yeah, when I look around the class and stuff, especially when I look at some of the, you know, my, you know, Caucasian colleagues, and they would be considered, you know, children of very Republican or very right wing type, you know, parents and stuff like that. They're sitting there just totally with their, you know, chin in their hands, you know, like, what in the world is they saying? What's going on? Is it, you know, is this reality? Is this what, you know, I can't believe he's saying this. You know, and I said, yeah, this type of change is hard, especially you know, people in that middle sector, the upper middle class, and everything like that, because, you know, a lot of and in the middle class, you know, every facet of American life, you know, is going to undergo a change. You know, it's going to an adjustment, if you will, and You know, but at the end of the day, it's going to be okay, folks. We're gonna survive. You know, as a matter of fact, once we get this thing, you know, in place and stabilized, you know, you'll see how it all works. You know, one world government, you know, one world order, one world under God. It won't be just one nation under God. It'll be one world under God. You know, a lot of people fear this one world order thing. You know, but if we put God as over the whole world as he is, and, you know, we make the people of this planet, you know, we conduct ourselves in a rational manner, respectful, you know, that's not actually the word morally, you know, if we do it morally, it will work perfectly. It will work as you know, because it's another part of on earth as it is in heaven. It has another part of that, you know, of that harmony, that harmonious, you know, relationship, you know, around the world. This is inevitable, folks. It's written in scripture. You know, this is the will of God, and this is, you know, man carrying it out. You know, and we just have to, as common people, we have to make sure that it is done in the righteous manner, in a moral manner, and keep everybody, you know, as honest as possible as this thing rolls out, because it's happening. When you look at they got this thing called reverse mortgage out right now. And it's dealing with the old people or elderly 65 and older that own their houses and stuff. And they want to get a lump of cash, you know, and this is okay. I mean, hey, you know, if you got a house and you're an old person and you really don't have any heirs or anything like that or whatever, you know, or however you want to do it, you know, you want your good lump of cash, or that house is worth, you know, $100,000 or $150,000, $200,000 or whatever the case may be, you can get that money and, you know, do some things, you know, do some traveling, do some investing, do some whatever you want to do. But when you pass on, when that person passes on, that property goes to the government, to, you know, because it's a government-backed reverse mortgage. You're hearing them say that. So that simply means when that person passes on, that property goes to the federal government. And their objective here is to acquire as much property as they possibly can. All of the foreclosures and things of that nature, the glut of foreclosures that happened during the downturn and the crush of, you know, the former, not Obama's administration, but the former administration, Mr. Bush's administration, a lot of those, you know, properties, you know, they squashed the economy. And, it's amazing what that particular administration done. Stimulus money. They had the stimulus money coming down. What happened to that money? Where'd it go? Poof, it was gone. It was like, you know, we heard about it was coming down the pike, but it never hit you and me. I mean, we got maybe, what, $1,800 or whatever, the $1,200 or whatever the case may be. But that has, if you do that math and add all of that up about the people that received it versus, you know, the amount of stimulus money that came down during that administration, you'll see a lot of money just magically and mysteriously disappeared. Where'd it go? Well, the banks got propped up, that's for sure. And, you know, held the wealth, and some of the people up on that level, they got a, you know, they got their, you know, fair share, and just do. Didn't nobody say nothing. Didn't nobody stand up and yell about it, scream about it, or anything. You know, and now that I talk to a lot of my, you know, right wing friends, you know, and I kind of share it with them and stuff, they kind of sit back there like, you know, you're onto something there, because we never really thought about it, you know, up until now, but there was a whole lot of money that just went missing. I'm like, yeah, that's a lot of our money, you know, gone, you know, proof, pow, you know, banks got it, you know, people got it, you know, it got gone. And a lot of it is used to invest in the great transformation, you know, in the emerging market. They're propping that up. They're putting their money over there. I mean, like I said, in the analogy of the printer, I can get this printer here in America, but I can go overseas and get the same printer, you know, for $50 because, you know, I'm paying, you know, a worker, say for instance, Hewlett Packard, you know, $25 an hour. I can pay that same worker to do that same job, you know, overseas, you know, $2 an hour. He's happy as heck because now he's making money, you know, to feed his family and things of that nature, legitimately, without having like digging through trash and different things like that to, you know, find morsels of food and do whatever to get a little drink of water and stuff. You know, he's happy to make that kind of money. He's going to work, you know, 24 hours a day if he has to, you know, if he can, you know, to feed his family and stuff. He's not going to complain about it. He's not going to, you know, he's not going to unionize about it or anything like that, at least not anytime in the near future, you know, to increase wages and things of that nature and deal with, you know, whatever, you know, minimal health conditions and insurance and well, not insurance, but health, you know, care. He's going to be very productive, you know, and like I say, very happy and content. And at the end of the day, that printer comes out and, you know, it only costs, you know, $10 or, you know, $20 opposed to $200. You know, so the profit margin for the resale of that unit, you know, is much, 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 much greater to the investor, to the wealth, or to the wealthy that, you know, owns the corporation. That their revenues and profit margins, you know, go up, you know, exponentially, you know, because of this. So it's no magic, you know, thing here, you know, that we're talking about, you know, a simple mathematics, economics, and the way of the wealth. So anyhow, but it's just kind of it's kind of something else that, you know, my daughter comes home and children are starting to be educated about this this transformation. So it's underway, folks. It's happening. This is reality. She was also in a class, which is kind of mind-boggling, and it showed they drew some little stick pictures up there, and they drew the origin of man, you know, coming out of Africa, you know, and this was a, you know, a Caucasian professor, you know, he's probably he's conservative more than anything else, but he's dealing with reality, folks, and he drew these pictures of people, you know, emerging from Africa and migrating around the world and stuff, and you know, the students are kind of, you know, are blown away by this. You know, they're like, "What? What is he talking? Is this real? Folks, this is real. This is fact. This is evolution. This is how God, you know, put things in motion. You know, he didn't have anything to do. I didn't have anything to do. You know, don't hate the messenger. You know, deal with the facts. You know, like they said, you know, sometimes you can't handle the truth. But anyhow." All of these different things, you know, are being put in place and being educated so that they can, you know, when they have the concept of, you know, first man being, you know, born or probably being born in Africa, and, you know, there's so many people struggling and so forth in the continent of Africa, it makes it a little bit easier for that person to, and understanding the globalization and what is taking place, to reach out and start developing those places and those lands and things of that nature. And, you know, putting themselves in a position to, you know, to obtain some of the wealth and some of the, you know, the income, you know, of these activities and things of that nature. That's a smart thing to do, you know, put ourselves in that particular, in that cycle, you know, of income so that we can, you know, share in the transformation and what's taking place instead of sitting back on the sideline, you know, mumbling and grumbling about what's actually occurring and stuff. So anyhow, we're going to touch more heavily on that. I mean, that's looking at Obamacare and Romneycare. Romneycare is a framework for Obamacare. It's the wealthy not wanting to take care of the least fortunate. Everybody's got to pay something. So guess what? The burden is lessened on the wealthy. They don't have to put so much money into the system, into the health care, you know, system, if you will, to support it. You know, so they like it. They're in favor of Romneycare. They're in favor of Obamacare. It's not going anywhere. They may change it. They may tweak it and adjust it and stuff like that. But as long as the wealth has power, you know, and it's a less, you know, financial burden on them, you can best believe they're going to keep it in place. I mean, it's simple. You know, at one point in time, you know, folks didn't have to pay, you know, into the system or health care. They could just get a free ride, quote unquote free ride. And they're cutting that out. You know, everybody's got to contribute a dollar, you know, at least a dollar. If not, you know, you work, got taxes, boom, they're going to hit you on that. But all that money in a pool is less money that the wealthy have to come out of pocket, you know, to maintain the American health care system. So It's no, it's this not going anywhere. And we talked about Trump and Cruz and all this other kind of stuff taking place. Cruz, he's inevitably be president. I don't know why we're still talking about him and stuff. But you know, the thing about it is, if Trump destroys, you know, Cruz, and Cruz, you know, and Trump falls out because of, you know, his being, you know, ungodly and perhaps an atheist and things of that nature, that leaves Rubio. Rubio is not, you know, he doesn't have the savvy globally. He's way too green. He's like a little boy in that particular arena and stuff. And he just won't have diplomatically what it takes, you know, to be the president of the greatest nation on earth. Which leaves a thing in for Hillary Clinton. Hillary and probably Bernie Sanders even could be vice president. Now listen to him speak today, and the old guy, he's still connecting the dots, you know, up top, you know, in the head, you know. So God bless him, 74 years old. I heard him say today that, and that may be the ticket, you know, Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. I mean, it's, you know, crazier things have happened. But that's probably, you know, when you look at in terms of negotiating around the world and diplomacy and different things like that, you know, she's about the only one that's really there. And Bernie Sanders, you know, with his semi-social, you know, ideology, which kind of, you know, lines up with the globalization activity and stuff. It kind of all the pieces of the puzzle kind of fall together, if you will. Let's see. I want to make sure that, oh, Robert Gates, he got on there today. He was on Meet the Press. He was talking about, you know, one negotiating voice, you know, around the world, and common destiny amongst people, people working together. Folks, this is all the language of the global, you know, the global push, the globalization, the global effort, the greatest transformation of wealth in the history of the world. They're all in on it. You know, they're all got their, you know, their buckets, if you will, you know, in place and ready to, you know, siphon off revenues and profits and income and different things like that. We got to do the same. You got to start businesses and get the education and the knowledge, you know, to go into this new paradigm of economy, of world economy. I've been speaking about it for years, and it's here. It's finally here. So prepare yourself for it and embrace it, because it's inevitable. You know, we can't continue, you know, the world in this current, you know, state, you know, where we have, you know, powerful, wealthy nations on one side of the planet and poor, undeveloped, oppressed and struggling nations, you know, in other places around the world. This is not, you know, the way God wants this world to be. And the change is here. It's written in the scripture. If you look at it, know how to read it, and you know, it's prophesized, and now it's here, and it's taking place. And in my opinion, it's long overdue, because I understand, you know, the revenues, and I understand the rewards, you know, of this activity and of these actions and stuff. So let's get ready, let's get prepared, and get your thinking cap on, and see how you can benefit from this transformation. So anyhow, that's my broadcast for today. Love one another. Take care of one another. It's the right thing to do. That's why I always say take care of one another. This is what global transformation, taking care of your fellow man, even though he's around the earth, we got to look out for him. And, you know, if it's based on something that doesn't exist, what does it really cost you? You know, so let's you know, we can do this in a righteous and moral way. It is, you know, on earth, you know, as it is in heaven. So anyhow, talk to you on the next broadcast. Take care. And until then, so long for now.